some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
My name is Jeremy Greer.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is an immortal favorite. The last immortal favorite.
Yes.
The next favorite will be another kind.
a different sort of favorite. And this week is our wrap-up episode about Immortal Unchained. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me again, y'all. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you, you know, everything you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do a lot.
It's one of those things where if I call out a specific thing, I worry it will sound like I don't appreciate the other things.
That's don't worry about it. Yeah, I feel that way all the time. So, like, if you say yeah. Like, I get into this with Don't Give Up Skeleton a lot, where I was about to create a page. It was like recommended episodes because there's like 160 of them now, and I'm like, well, if I put like Gary and Cole there. Like will Chris get mad if I don't put Chris there?
Right.
So I definitely know that anxiety, that fear of pissing people off.
Yeah. Jeremy, I only appreciate how tall you are.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. So, cool. Excellent.
Everything else is mild degrees of tolerance. So, but tight height, bro.
Sure. Tight.
Tight. Coolest thing you can say to somebody. Tight.
So aside from talking about our relative heights, kind of the remit of these wrap-up episodes is to speak with somebody who has a lot to say about you know, the game that we've covered, right, as opposed to getting a guest on each individual episode, and also to read your responses that you sent in to us.
And to get well over 18 feet of podcaster on one podcast.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. Like, oh, just, man, imagine.
Look at all that podcaster
into the like fucking Mecha Shiva into the podcast halls of podcasts and just be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, we are the sheriff of sucking you off. We're extremely tall. You
know, I gotta say, I would like to be on be at the head of this particular podcast centipede. You guys can be straight up behind me.
Done.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, done and done. So let's talk about Immortal Unchained as a whole.
Yeah.
Now that we are at the end, and Jeremy, I'm going to have you kind of start and maybe lead this a little bit, since you are our guest and the person who more or less like turned me and Cole onto it.
Sure. So I want to take this opportunity, number one, to shout out our friends over at Twin Humanities for introducing this game to me in the first place. It was their two episodes that they did after finding the game. Notably, Patty saw a YouTube ad and didn't click through it somehow. I don't know how that happened, but then like saw this game and was like, oh, you know, I'm willing to check that out. And did so, and both of them kind of got addicted to it and played through it all. I was on the third episode that they covered it, where we talked a lot about the game, kind of initial thoughts and things like that. So I just wanted to say thank you to them for introducing it. I also want to shout out their recent Game of the Year episode. They performed a song for every game on their top 10 Game of the Year list.
It's ridiculous.
Patty's version of Unchain My Heart was absolutely brilliant and amazing. And yeah, it's definitely worth looking up just to hear him crooning Unchain My Heart. So, but yeah, I, you know, playing this for the first time, I was kind of drawn in at the beginning. Like, I like the mechanics. I like shooting. I like the idea of like souls with guns, which had been something that comes up on Don't Give Up Skeleton quite a bit, but I never really thought would be good or even possible. So playing it, getting through that first area, getting into Viridian. But when it really, really grabbed me was the Apex Citadel, Apexion, where, you know, just that weird, you know, Tron, like purple Tron, basically. And then the thing that really cemented me was getting into the furnace, starting to find these doors to other parts of the world, and realizing like the trip up to Iska being like learning about the Queen of Death, learning that she's been making these souls into these enemies and this army of the undead, realizing that those portals are probably there so that she can transfer the souls of the undead or these undead army dudes into those other areas for nefarious purposes, and like realizing how that all tied in, just and that combined with like the tenseness and the difficulty, like just fucking sold me. And then from that point on, I was hooked. So I was able to overlook almost all of the negative things about this game. Like, I think that it's definitely a game made by a small team of people. I think there's like 30 people at that studio. They've done an amazing job of, after the game releasing, supporting that with new features and with bug fixes and all kinds of rebalances and stuff like that. I think it's a much more playable game now. If either one of you checked out the new tutorial level, it is absolutely amazing. Like,
yeah,
one of the biggest things that I heard about this game is like, wow, I turned it on and it's so generic and it's all gray blocks and it just looks kind of ugly and nothing really makes sense. And they really, if this is where they're going with their other games, like if they're going to put this level of polish and this level of like graphic intensity into their games going forward, like I'm 100% here for everything that Toadman makes from now on. It's just good all around. But I was able to overlook all of the small, you know, kind of niggling things. The first time that I got blown up in Belly Flop Swamp, and then I got knocked on my ass, and then like five dudes jumped on me and killed me while I was on the ground, was super frustrating. And I was like, boy, Gary's not going to like this whenever it happens to him. But I was... But even then, like I was still very, very much into it. And like we talked about in the last episode, the fourth wall breaking at the end, the weird stuff that you can find throughout the game world, like I just, all of that just really, really impressed me. And I'm really happy that you guys enjoyed it and that had a chance to talk about it, especially over multiple episodes. Like I originally pitched this to you guys for a Watch Out for Fireballs, which I think would have been a really good fit for it. Like I think you guys probably could have covered most of it, but I'm super glad we got the up close Bonfire Side Chat look to the game. So.
Yeah, that new tutorial is really good. You reminded me that it happens, that they put that out earlier today. So I went and spent 20 minutes playing through it. And I think that it definitely speaks to maybe a little bit like they designed the tutorial first and then did a bunch of other really cool stuff. And then like it shows that like maybe possibly the best tutorials are made last, right? I have no idea if that's actually the case. That's just the way that I read it, by how much better the new tutorial is than the first one. And I didn't have like a real problem with the first tutorial, just the new one, like it is kind of laid out and you can see the decisions about the stuff that they are trying to teach you and show you, in a way that I really appreciated.
Yeah. They also pretty much. The whole thing is like vertical, is all vertical now. Mm-hmm. And the way that enemies will fly in as opposed to just like spawning in, like literally crash these jet pods like around us. I think all of that stuff is super cool. And I told someone the other day that it almost sets up the game to be something that it's not. Like you're not gonna see that level of interesting just from an art perspective. You're not gonna see that until maybe Viridian, but especially Apexion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because the new tutorial, which is like definitely better, is an interesting trade-off, because I feel like the first tutorial, what they were going for was this exceedingly grim, like crawling yourself up from nothing kind of feeling with it. And then just, maybe just a wider base of playtesters being like, yeah, it's really visually bland though.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't, and they traded maybe what they were going for before and realizing like, actually we weren't getting across that idea. Let's get across something that is at least more exciting.
Yeah.
You know, which is a cool, it's a good trade. Like it's smart to do that. The new tutorial is an improvement, because that is a thing that I also had that first impression where I was like, this is a lot of gray corridors.
Yeah.
And it's not too long in the first level before you go back to some corridors.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's really interesting the way this is structured as far as introducing its visual interest solidly in the back half of the game. You know, for the most part, like, or at least like the back middle, like until you get to the skyways, even Viridian, which is a forest, still just feels like a video game forest. Like,
yeah.
Until you get to Tronland, it's nothing super distinctive. And until you get to the carnal pits or whatever the thing with the sarcophagus is, it doesn't feel atmospheric. Like,
yeah,
it's a very weird game as far as where the appeal is put, like where the hooks are for it.
Yeah,
you know. But I think it's a testament. I had a similar experience, at least to Jeremy, where like going through it just felt like it worked enough to keep me engaged early on to get me to those parts that were even more engaging. You know, having that, doing it at range, which we talked about in the first episode, like doing a range Souls-like, just works so much better than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
And is just, especially I feel like playing this after Neo and playing it after the Ringed City, also just easing down a little bit on the difficulty. Like, this is a tough game, but it's not as tough as either of those games.
Right.
It doesn't feel unfair at very many points. And even though there are those things where you get knocked down and get hit while you're down, it generally doesn't do that. Like, that kind of gentleness, like tough, but still fair gentleness, and that visual interest slowly creeping up was a real way to like kind of get me to get hooked into it and feel that kind of intense draw to keep playing, you know?
Yeah. There's any number of really smart and canny decisions that they made to make the range combat feel like it has the rhythm of Souls, which is kind of the most important thing to me, at least, right? You know, they make mm-hmm. the range combat feel like melee combat because of, you know, cooldowns and charge ups and telegraphs and, you know, the things not being hit scan. Like, there are a lot of traps they could have fallen into. I definitely feel like you do about the difficulty in this. It wouldn't be as satisfying if the way that they toned it down, though, was just numerical, right? Like, in a way, the way that the series got, you know, the way that the main Soulsborne series got bad was because stuff just had way too many phases, way too much HP, et cetera, et cetera. But also, like, there was a certain amount of complexity and meta complexity added to just the move sets of the bosses and the enemies and stuff. Like, stuff was designed specifically to fuck you for thinking that mm-hmm. you knew what you were doing. It was so refreshing mm-hmm. going back into this, you know, especially with the boss fights, which could probably be seen as like being, you know, just way too easy. You know, for people who are way into the difficulty aspect of this, it was so great, though, for me personally, to go to a Dark Souls 1 level of complexity where each boss kind of had like four or five moves and used them in interesting ways. And I could kind of hold it all in my head, and I didn't feel like I was like playing three levels of chess against a designer who wanted to like trip my fingers up. You know,
yeah.
The ways that they ease it up. Yeah, it's a first entry. Yeah, so it's a first entry for sure. But just the ways that they decided to keep things approachable while still feeling meaty. Like, in no world would I say that this is like an easy game overall. I just feel like it is incredibly well tuned, and if you know, it feels like it's made by people who appreciate the things about the play of Souls that I personally appreciate. Right.
Yeah, totally when I say agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like when I say first entry, it's like we talked about it a lot, but like starting with Bloodborne a little bit in the Dark Souls 2 DLCs, the Soulsborne games have gotten into a difficulty arms race where each game, instead of starting as an alternate start for a new series,
mm-hmm.
even Bloodborne ups the challenge considerably in a way that, like, if you had not played any Souls games before, would be a rude awakening.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I like Bloodborne. This is not me saying that game is overall too hard. It just ups that challenge quite a bit. It doesn't feel like a new entry. This feels like something that is a quote from the Daughters of Ash guy, and like when we eventually cover that, I have a lot of things to say about Daughters of Ash.
Yeah.
Is that he's like, oh, this is meant to be not a new challenge mode, this is meant to be an alternate beginning, like a different kind of Dark Souls. Like, you know, this is the way, I think there's a quote where he says, like, this is the way the developers would have done it if they could.
Man, that would be cool if that was the case.
Yeah, that is an odious thing to say. Don't necessarily quote me on that. I have to find that quote. I think somebody passed me that.
Yeah.
But it's, that doesn't feel like that.
No.
Daughters of Ash is incredibly harsh and difficult. This feels like an alternate Demon Souls or an alternate Dark Souls in terms of scalability and difficulty. Like, it is an opening start that is different. It's not just to your point, Cole, like, no one would ever call it too easy, but it's also not just a carbon copy. Like, one of the reasons why I feel like the Soulsborne games got into that difficulty race is because, oh, we don't want to just do, you know, Asylum Demon again. Like, we right. can't just keep doing these ideas. We have to find new ways to iterate on them. And after five games, like, we might not have that many ideas on how to do this in the system without just adding more phases.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're out of gimmicks and stuff. By adding kind of range combat to this, like, you have this whole new set of kind of available modes, because even if the bosses don't have new gimmicks, like, the bosses in this feel like they could be Souls bosses to me, like early Souls bosses. Mm-hmm. Since the player's verb set is so different, you can then kind of redo those Asylum Demon level complexity bosses. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I mean, that doesn't give the developer Toadman enough credit, because, like, they made up their own thing. None of these things are carbon copies of anything from Dark Souls,
right?
But you can take something like you know, a boss like the Ravager Commander, mm-hmm. or something like that, which is just not that complicated or special, and just make it feel fresh because what the player is doing is different.
Yeah.
And it recontextualizes it and kind of keeps it right sized as far as difficulty and approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agree. And I think that, you know, I shared your opinions on Dark Souls 3, especially the DLCs of, that's not the way that I want to play. I don't want to go fight Madeir. And guess what? I still haven't. Like, I have a Dark Souls podcast, and I've never killed Madeir. Yeah. You know, at me, mm-hmm. at me, Twitter bros. I don't care.
I have high five, buddy.
Yeah. He's at Plumber Duck. If you want
to, Plumber Duck. Yes, at 100%. But, you know, this game, like, felt, especially the boss encounters with, because all of them with one, I think, exception, had really easy run-ups. They were easy to iterate on. They had pretty clear tells. Like, I felt like any time I died to a boss, it was because either I was still learning their moveset and they surprised me, or I didn't know that a melee would do 99% of my health and that was a bad thing, so never get caught in a melee hit. Mm-hmm. Or just, you know, I'm learning. Like, I'm still learning the boss. It never felt like I was grinding against a Watchdog of the Old Lords, for example, of just, you know, getting one shot in no matter what my health was. And that stuff that's all very gratifying for me as someone who really, really likes going back to Dark Souls 1 and the satisfaction of, you know, clipping that Asylum Demon and realizing, like, oh, I took off with an unupgraded weapon. I took off like an eighth of his health. And that's a lot. Like, that's a good amount of health to take off on a first boss. So I was very pleasantly surprised with that. And then all of the stuff that they do that's different than Souls or similar to Souls and everything, I think works really well. And I think it's very much a first outing for a game developer. Like, they've worked on other stuff before, obviously, but I think this is their first, like, big attempt to do a game by themselves. And I'm just really excited to see what kind of follow ups they're going to do. Like, I'll if this is their Demon Souls, which I've heard that expression thrown out several times, if this is their Demon Souls, like, I cannot wait to see their Dark Souls. Right.
No.
Mm hmm. Yeah, what that plays into for me, like, I agree, like, I have the exact same optimism and stuff. And one of the things that makes us feel like a patina that covers the whole thing that I really appreciate is, and I alluded to it last episode, is this, like, kind of degree of modesty to it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it feels like it is a small team. It is an early big project for them. It has this sense of lack of grandeur to it that I always kind of appreciate in games. You know, mm-hmm. My previous, like, touch point for this is always Shadowrun Returns.
Yeah.
Which to me is like a B+ game, but never wanted to be more, you know, never has grand designs to be more than that.
Yeah.
And this feels like that to me too. Like, that's about where I'd put this, like, a really good game. It's about where it lands. It's really promising for future efforts, and it doesn't it does a bunch of things incredibly well, like, very, very deftly. It doesn't reach for the absolute stars and fuck up, and it doesn't try to include every single thing, you know, and the kitchen sink into the game. Like, it feels like this triumph of modesty.
Yeah.
Like a middle A, like a double A game,
mm-hmm.
you know, a single A game. Yeah. And that's, like, a really cool place to be.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the things that originally got the Twin Humanities boys so excited, is because both of them had bounced off of some of the big AAA releases during the time period where this came out, and were kind of disillusioned with AAA gaming in general. And I've heard Pad talk about this several times, of, you know, the days of the PS2 era where you would find these, like, solid B tier games, and they were a fucking video game. You know, mm-hmm. they weren't trying to you know, have a grand story or anything like that. They were just a fucking, people just wanted to make a weird video game. So they made a weird video game, and you would run it and you would beat it and you would return it and you were done. Like, it was a weird experience. And I feel like that's this kind of harkens back to those days of, you know, not every game needing the $70 million worth of polish, or, you know, horse balls contracting or expanding based on the temperature. Like, it can just be a video game. And yeah. I think that's fine. I think you made a really good point too, Gary, when talking about the kind of ending stuff of the ending scene, like the big twist at the end, during the last episode of, like, you know, I don't, which you said really struck home with me. I didn't need it to be anything more than that. Like, I don't need it to be supported by a grand theme or even like a commentary on like what it is to play a video game. I just thought it was cool. And like, that's a lot of this game for me, is I just think it's dope as hell. Like, I like shooting guns. Like, I don't need a justification of why there's like something literally called a shotgun in this completely like vaguely sci-fi like alternate universe. Like, you can just call it a shotgun. Like, it's fine. I know what a shotgun is. Let's go. Let's roll with it. So yeah, like that solid, like the aspiration, the modest aspiration, I think is really important to this game.
So, I mean, having played this and gone and, you know, I sought out some reviews, and just the reception that this got is so incongruous with my experience. Right. And I understand that talking in this review about, you know, other reviews, it's a little bit meta, but like, to that point about the modesty, like, that just, like, it doesn't seem like that modesty can even fly, even if, you know, a lot of people might say they want that, right? In the first episode, I talk about, you know, a sense of, you know, polish bias or whatever it is, not polish bias, but I don't know, just a complete jank averseness that that people bring, even when they are looking at a modest product, right?
It's really interesting too, because when people do that, when they fall into that, which is what happened, right? Like, I ended up reading a bunch of reviews, and then I watched some YouTube reviews of this where people were essentially dinging this extremely hard for that lack of polish.
Yeah.
What I think, and I've talked about this since like episode one of Watch Out for Fireballs, like this whole idea of that polish costs a lot of money, those budgets are unsustainable. In order for developers to want to take risks to get that much money, everything is going to turn to Anthem. Everything is going to turn to Fallout 76. Everything is going to be a lifestyle, multiplayer, always online, loot-based game, because that is where sustainable money is at that scale.
Yeah, not just sustainable money, but, you know, 100x. You know, not just 10x, but 100x.
Yeah, exactly. It's not even, the whole idea that there's not enough money for these fucking ghouls is a totally different thing. But like, you end up with studios like things like Arkane, or you look at Squaresoft, you know, the people who did the new Deus Ex games and stuff, these single player games that don't sell very well, that are modest in terms of length and included content, even if they do have a little bit more polish than something like this, and they sell like dick. When people refuse to allow for this middle space, that is what you're asking for. Like, that's the alternative.
Yeah.
You know, if everything has to be that level of polish and up, like, this has to be FromSoft polish and up for my soul's likes, like, you are that you're voting for a worse world for video games. And I'm not saying people need to accept Lords of the Fallen.
we can
go a little bit higher than that. Like, there's still separating this polish bias from like legitimate good or bad game design is difficult but important. Like, everyone can design good games. It doesn't take more money to do better design.
Yeah.
You know, there are indie games, there's Downwell. Like, it is, you know, there's everything Tom Francis makes. Like, you can solo make these really, really well designed games. It just, maybe give up some of your fucking boner for polish for 2 seconds. Like, if somebody, you know, if a hitbox is not perfect, like, this, you know, I'm going to go to YouTube and just drag this fucking thing.
I saw a tweet that's like the second somebody who's talking about a movie says it's full of plot holes, the characters don't go anywhere, or the story doesn't go anywhere, and the characters have nothing to do, you can safely ignore them because they have YouTube poisoning. I think that there's YouTube poisoning for like looking at hitboxes that don't line up. There are hitboxes that can ruin an experience and make a fight bullshit, but like it's a little bit like the Steam people who you will like downrate a game because it doesn't have 60 frames per second or whatever.
Exactly.
You know? At this point, I'm flailing wildly at people on the internet that I don't like, but there certainly is like just a like, yeah, YouTube poisoning that happens and is actively asking for a worse world.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
The reviews and stuff, I still find just like I went through and read some of those too, because as soon as I started talking about this game on Twitter, like the first thing that I would get from people is, oh, wow, I looked at Metacritic and this game sucks. And I'm like, I mean, sure. Like, and I don't ever look at Metacritic. I hardly ever read reviews for games and use them as purchasing decisions. Like, I don't look at stuff like that. Like, generally, I play so few games and I'm pretty well aware of my taste and what people in the games media that I follow's taste, that like I can ferret out pretty quick like what I'm going to like and what I'm not going to like. But just reading those, I was like, did we play the same game?
Mm-hmm.
Like I know they patched a bunch of stuff in, but like some of the stuff that they were complaining about, I just didn't get. Like not to go on like a video game reviews should be this or should be that or anything, but man, like don't. Like, I think that's my issue. My takeaway from this game more than anything is like, just don't rely on other people to tell you that a game is bad at all times. Like, there could be something there that you would like if you gave it a shot. And I'm happy that the game seems to have picked up a little bit. Like, there's more and more people joining that Discord server. I think I joked on the Twin Humanities podcast that my Don't Give Up Skeleton Discord server had more people than their full games.
Sure.
And I think they finally broke that record. I think they finally got there, which they should. Like, they deserve more recognition than my podcast about Dark Souls. But yeah, like I'm glad that the game seems to be taking off and they seem to be keeping it afloat and everything. I just like, man, like they seem to be doing all of the right things. Like, here's a Souls-like with an interesting hook. You know, Lobos did a stream of it. I think Sunlight Blade, like they got people from the Souls community to like try to show the game off, and it just did not hit at all. And until like word of mouth started spreading around, which is really crazy to me. Like, I don't know what it is about this game specifically where, you know, you mentioned Lords of the Fallen, like Lords of the Fallen, like got held up like it was the second coming of fucking Dark Souls. Like, where was that hype for this? Or where is even the backlash for this? That
Lords here's of the Fallen thing got, is. So. Is that this is in the wake of the backlash of Lords of the Fallen.
Yeah.
So like this is done no favors by one, coming after Lords of the Fallen.
Yeah.
Which everyone's like, oh, we've been fooled. Two, coming after the wake of Neo, which like I don't like Neo. I like this game a lot more than Neo, but Neo was very popular and very polished and put together. Mm-hmm. So people were like, learn two lessons. Like, one, Souls likes are not, don't have to be good. Mm-hmm. Two, they can be like really polished.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that did this really no favors. And like, I mean, I guess the other thing I wanted to say about your point, though, about the reviews thing is that, like, I agree with everything you said. At the same time, like, you do have to have some kind of metric for, like, having, you know, if you can only have so much money, you only have so much time in a day. I don't think you can just, like, randomly throw dartboards at a thing and just kind of try new games in case, you know, poorly reviewed games in case they work out, you know? But I think what I would like to see more people do, I guess, is look past that Metacritic score. Like, I just went to Metacritic for this game. I've only heard of one outlet that reviewed this, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, and that's what gives it the reputation. The actual user reviews are all really high. The official review kind of score and the official thing that's dominating, like, oh, I heard this was bad, is a total of 8 different review sites, one of which I've heard of and almost all of which are like overseas, which doesn't mean that they're worse, but it means I can't read the fucking review, you know, to see what it says and stuff. And it's like, I think this is one of those things that's a casualty of like, just like Metacritic being fucking awful.
Yeah.
Like for the industry,
sure.
Like Metacritic specifically is gross. I would like to read when a game comes out. I like going to a website, you know, that I trust and reading reviews of stuff and just being like, oh, this is, you know, and you read for content, not score, and you read stuff that you know the writer, and that can be extremely useful. This game didn't even get that, though.
No.
You know, this isn't like a Fallout 76 situation where like that game is a fucking travesty and got rounded for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got totally dragged for it. This isn't like that. It didn't even get a chance. Like it got strangled in the crib before that even happened.
Yeah.
You know, that's the tragedy of it. So,
yeah.
Super bummer. Cause it does deserve more. And I really hope the other thing too, I guess, that just because somebody will mention it to us, if not, is that I think that the game, and I can't fault the developers for doing this. I just think purely in terms of more people playing it, it did not do itself any favors by coming out at $60. I don't blame them for charging that much. I feel good about the amount of money I spent on this game.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the look of something that should cost that much, and our perceptions as to what games should cost are really fucked.
Yes.
And this game, I feel like, is another victim of that. Like, a lot of people saw it, and one, I think that scared a lot of people off. Two, it set a lot of expectations. People were like, $60, I should get a Neo level of polish.
Yeah.
You know, for a Neo level price.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was always the second thing after the Metacritic thing was like, why is this game $60? And I'm like, because they wanted to sell it for $60. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what to, there are no ethical video games in capitalism, dog. Like, I don't know what to tell you about this.
Like, I can't decide what your money is worth to you, but that doesn't mean you get to decide what money is worth
for everybody.
Period.
Yeah.
To them. You know, what, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't mean.
Or to the devs, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, for, yeah, definitely. But like to say this is not worth $60 because he doesn't get on the ladder, right, is a little bit, I don't know.
Totally. Like that is a weird set of circumstances, like, or a weird set of standards. Very disappointing.
Yeah.
People. We deserve a better class of gamer. This hobby deserves a better class of fan. Like in some very real ways, like,
yeah.
Not that every, and if people are listening to this and they tried it and they didn't like it,
yeah,
like that's not my point. Like, it makes tons of sense to just have different taste and to maybe you like didn't dig this. Like, I'm sure some people are like, I can't, you know, how did you guys like this and not Neo? What the fuck? You know, like that probably has happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool if you don't like it, like it is fine, but it's more that the fact that this, we're talking more about the context of like how it was presented and marketed and the chance it got in the court of public opinion and that being generally not super fair.
Wowie zowie. So I went to a competitor to Metacritic, GameRankings.com. The PS4 version only has 5 reviews, none of which I've heard about. The Xbox One version has 4 reviews, or no, sorry, 3. Like, no site got a hold of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got just completely ignored in the modern press, which is really fucking strange to me. Like, that's, it's, you know, most any time that you see like a game like this, that's a Souls like, usually gets at least like a couple of headlines.
Yeah.
Like,
or, you know, or it's talked about for fucking years before it comes out.
I mean, even that Twitter account, like X Meet Start Souls or whatever, didn't even do a thing on this game because nobody wrote about it. So there was nothing for him to tweet about. Like, it's ridiculous. I feel like a lot of that is just, you know, it's a relatively unknown developer, you know, making a game with a weird setting with not a whole lot of money and with not a lot of people. So like, you can't lean on the graphics or sizzle to sell your game. And like a lot of the stuff about it, like, I mean, it really clicked with me, but like you said, Gary, like, it's not going to click with everybody, but it also doesn't make it a shitty game if it doesn't click it for everybody. Like, that's a solid like B game.
Yeah.
Not everybody clicked with Mr. Mosquito either, but still, some people really like that game.
I will be really curious how many posthumous reviews are done, like, or how, you know, like, if there will be like revised reviews later on. Like, well, I can see this game getting god-handed pretty hard in about 5 years.
That's the hope, right? So what would happen is the ideal arc for these guys that I want, because I desperately want them to keep iterating on some of the skill they've shown here.
Yeah.
Not just because I liked it. To me, there's no guarantee that what they'll do next will be great.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it feels like a bet I want to take because I like this so much.
Yeah.
To do that, they need to make another thing that does have a little bit of that crossover appeal, and then people will come back to this.
Yeah.
Like, that would be awesome. You know, whenever they make, and so I guess like before we get, you know, to the responses and stuff, I mean, I didn't want to cut everybody off, but I wanted to throw a question to the room, which is like, what do you want to see next from the developer? Like, how would you like to see them iterate on this? What things do you want to see improve? What features would you want to see, et cetera?
I mean, so the characters, if they could get on ladders better, No, it's all right.
First of all, frame rate and depth of field. Those are my two.
Yeah.
If those two things were running for president, they'd have my vote. The frame rate, depth of field, Total Biscuit Memorial presidential ticket now gets my vote.
Yeah, so. I thought that was shitty and unconstructive. I just wanted to make an easy joke. I will step back and actually compose
FPS
a thought.
Ladder, yeah. or get the fuck out. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mean to be non-constructive. Sorry.
But how about a real fucking answer, Ross?
How about a real answer? No. Like, so it's really tough to say, right? Like, I would like to see them work on their economy, not like, you know, what your you know, souls can be spent on or whatever, but like literally the stuff we were talking about in the previous episode. I would like them to get confident enough to make their levels shorter and more dense and just kind of rely on the initial presentations of their ideas rather than feel like they need to get something out to a whole length, right? So an economy of design, an economy of space, an economy of, you know, just kind of like tasks and enemies, because this game, for as much as I enjoyed it, it did fall down in those, you know, fractured void seat of the Senate moments, right? Like if they could learn a lesson from this, it is that we can do less and better. Well, regardless of like the subject matter that they choose for the next one, or regardless if they, you know, do the same but more, that is a lesson that they can learn, you know, focus and sharpen.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Would love to see that. Even just like, you know, shorter levels, same length of game would be fine with more levels.
Yeah.
You know, more biomes. And I understand that's a budgetary thing and this is all wish list stuff. Like more biomes and more bespoke ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the early areas of this, some areas in this game feel like they're exploring an idea very specifically. Sometimes like the Senate halls, you know, are exploring really big spaces with snipers at the end of them. Like it's not particularly interesting. I would want to see them kind of push and really, really just kind of explore more interesting ideas more fully and more often.
Yeah.
In terms of level. Totally agree.
I'd want to see a little bit more of a surfacing of the actual like lore and story. Like I know Dark Souls has made it very fashionable to hide a bunch of that and to tell stories through item descriptions and things like that. And I think they did an okay job with that, but there's just so much of it here. Like just, you know, and I know it writing lore is probably the cheapest way to do it. Like not to disparage writers or anything, but like writing a paragraph on the back of a post-it note and attaching that to a shotgun is way easier than say like designing an NPC. But I want more NPCs. Like I want more direct storytelling, because I think they have a good story here. They have a good universe. Mm-hmm. And I think they may have done themselves a disservice by hiding all of the lore stuff and like just a crazy amount of collectibles. On my second run through, I wanted to, you know, I decided I was going to get that lore trophy. And when I got to the end of the game, I was after like scavenging everything and like really scouring the levels, I only had like a third of them. And like that was somebody who was familiar with the game and who kind of knew where to look around and still like didn't get all that stuff. And that's a lot of wasted potential to me. Like another NPC or more NPCs or just, you know, bosses that talk to you. I've always liked bosses that talk to you. So you know, stuff like that is where I would want to see them go.
Yeah, I don't know that it gains a lot from trying to ape that Souls trickle. You know, in general, like what if they ditched it entirely? Like don't just like a little bit more with NPCs. Like NPCs are expensive. They have voice acting and stuff like that. But have, you know, computers or something you like hack into, like change, you know, maybe I think that segues into like the two things I want to say, one of which is hue a little bit less strongly to Dark Souls than this does. Like we talked about this in the first episode. And I think that this is the most like out of the souls like this is so just like, yeah, we're Souls. Like here's your Lord Soul moment. Here's your Anne Orlando moment. Like this is a Souls ass Souls like. I think that the way that storytelling doing the lore notes feels almost like obligatory to being a Souls like. And I agree that like what they have is that there is actually pretty good. Maybe that light doesn't need to be hit under a bushel.
Yeah.
You know, like I kind of feel like in general, no one but From needs to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it is okay for that to be from Signature Thing, and I'd much rather have that be their thing than four phase mega bosses.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of way of telling a story. But having the structure be a little bit different. Like, you could do a little bit more traditional of a structure if you didn't have the skeleton of Dark Souls to hang on to. And that makes a lot of sense for kind of an early outing. Maybe abandon that.
Yeah.
You know, still do that. You could still do kind of a Soul-like in terms of gameplay and stuff, but maybe challenge some of the assumptions that come with being a Souls-like.
Yeah.
You know, not saying that it needs to be side-scrolling or first-person or anything. It can still be an over-the-shoulder, you know, character action style game with the same Dark Souls pace and stuff, but just not hit quite as many Dark Souls markers.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily want to be like, this is the Anor Londo moment. This is the Lord Soul moment. I don't want to be able to necessarily put those things one-to-one onto it.
Yeah.
You know? And then I think the other thing I was going to say is that I would like to see them move to a setting that has more potential for visual interest. One of the weaknesses of this game in general, and it's not uniform, when we alluded to it earlier, I think, is that maybe half of the areas are actually pretty bland.
Mm-hmm.
And I found almost, with only a couple of exceptions, most of which were bosses, almost every enemy is exceedingly bland.
Yeah.
Like, does not have a good silhouette to read, does not look very interesting. It was hard to keep the enemies straight other than just looking at their weapons. They're not interesting to look at, to be around, even if they're interesting to fight. I think getting out of this kind of sci-fi milieu, because, like, they're not going to do a sequel. As we mentioned, the ending of this really does kind of close off that idea. Like, I do not want to know the continuing adventures of these characters, really. but moving to out of, like, a Tron virtual scape into this, like, still do gun souls, you know, keep your basic things, you can iterate on it. But what if they were, like, FPS style guns? Like, mm-hmm. what if this is a supernatural World War II game?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if it, you know, or what if this takes place in modern times, like in modern American cities? Like, make it take place in 2020 instead of, you know, dimensions away in the super far future.
Yeah.
You know, do something like that and give me like a better levels that don't run off my eyeballs, like they don't just you know, bounce off my eyeballs, and enemies that don't just bounce off my eyeballs.
Yeah.
A little bit. I would love to see that. I think that will help with the lore hooks. And I mean, my big change was the thing that you said, Cole. I just don't want to repeat it. This is the secondary thing as far as like theming and location.
Yeah.
That I would love to see.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, we said it in the first episode, like, it took a while for the aesthetic to warm, right? It just feels like by choosing this setting and by choosing, you know, to make things look the way they did, they started at a deficit of interest and attention when they didn't have to. It's a visual medium, and the visuals definitely play into the, you know, the play. I didn't intentionally say the same word twice there, but sometimes that happens. They could definitely give themselves a leg up by having a better, you know, by choosing their setting and their aesthetic, you know, to kind of give them that asset from the start.
That stuff matters. Like, yeah. It's one of the reasons why I can't get into Monster Hunter. Like, I just don't feel cool killing dinosaurs, you know, like the things you're fighting, the characters you're using, the weapons just don't look cool to me.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even if the wireframe, like, even if there's a part of me that could get really into that game,
mm-hmm.
I just don't care about killing these dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You know, give me pillars of skulls and demons any day of the week. Like, I'm into it, but like, give me dinosaurs. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Dinosaurs are friends. I don't want to kill dinosaurs. Like, I love dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You know?
None of the dinosaurs in Monster Hunter are your friend. I can promise you.
No.
They're fuck my you, friend. Ragalos. I hate you.
Ragalos is my buddy. But just like what you're actually doing and interacting with and interfacing with, like, matters, mm-hmm. at least a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think to add on to that, I don't know. I'm sure there's somebody that you can hire as a consultant to this. And, I don't find this like a turnoff in the game, because it just rolls over me. Like, I don't really care that much. But something that the Souls game that From Software does extremely well is name things. I mean, with the exception of Snake Ball, right? Like and large Snake Ball. Like, for the most part, they're pretty good at naming things. And a lot of the stuff here, like, the silent Janissary or whatever. Like, and I don't know if that's because, you know, English aren't a lot of the game designer's first language, so maybe it's not just translating well, or if it's literally just picking like nouns that they thought sounded cool and it doesn't work for me and it might work for some other person. But having more impactful names for environments and for enemies and for, you know, and also like going hand in hand with my story thing, like surfacing that a little bit more so that I know about the Silent Janissary before I get to the Silent Janissary. You know, think about how often we hear about Nito before we actually get to find Nito. And yeah, so I think just like the bare minimum, I think I'd like to see some cool stuff being done there too.
Hmm. Agreed. Totally agreed. Do we have any other kind of wrap up stuff for it before we move into other people's responses?
Not personally, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So super, super cool game. If the Toadmen people ever listen to this, thanks for making it. Like I'm really excited to see what you guys do next.
Yes.
And
I saw the PR rep jump into the BSC Slack the other day. So they're around. They're looking.
Love it. Hopefully, you know, you feel like this has been fair because we really did enjoy the episode or enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Let's read some of our community's responses to this.
Yeah. So I will get us started here with Bob, who says, you guys, Immortal Unchained is pretty good. How did this get panned and Lords of the Fallen got good reviews? I'm having fun playing Immortal Unchained. I never had fun playing Lords of the Fallen. What a way to bring back the show.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
Take that, Lords of the Fallen. If Lords of the Fallen devs are listening, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. We will play the Surge.
I'm so sorry that you made that game.
Yep. I swear I will experience the Surge with an open mind at some point.
Yeah. when Lords of the Fallen came up a little bit earlier, we were talking about like how did that get the benefit of the doubt and how do people get burned by that? I think that it was timing. I think that Lords of the Fallen, like specifically timing in terms of the console generation, like that was weirdly like a kind of a killer app for the PS4 when that first came out a little bit. Like, hey, here is a new Souls game and it's on a next generation of hardware. Like, just everybody drink up a little bit. I think that was just kind of like, well, what's the opposite of a hangover?
Yeah,
like that's what we had when Lords of the Fallen like first came out.
Yeah And I bought that game at full price. Like I just wanted to play it. I was just like, oh cool, like I'm in the mood for Souls. I'm still super horny for Souls.
Yeah,
let me check this out. I watched the VOD video on it that was like, it's not bad, it's just clunky and slow paced. And I'm like, hey, I just played, you know, Bloodborne or whatever, or like that's super fast. Like I want something clunky and slow paced, you know. I guess it was before Bloodborne, but yeah. I've seen stuff about Bloodborne a little bit, and I like the clunky slow pace of Souls games.
Yeah,
and like I still think me giving Lords of the Fallen in like my mind like a C or C minus is probably the highest anyone's ever thought of it. You know, I still think that I'm probably the top of the Metacritic on that for not thinking it's absolutely a disaster, but right. It's not good.
Yeah,
you know, so. I will read Dave's comment. Dave says, Jeremy often asks his guest on Don't Give Up Skeleton where the I think we just answered this. What they'd like to see from take on their next game next. I always thought Souls in space would be awesome, but feared there would be no good way to pull it off a shooting mechanic that works with the overall feel of a Soulsborne. After watching the credits roll on Unchained, my biggest takeaway is that it can be done and done very well. Sure, the teleporting grenade angels, finicky lock-on, and the malfunctionality. Multifunctionality of the X button caused more than a few moments of frustration. Blasting off a full rifle assault clip into a boss's glowing back orb felt so good. Although I'd put the overall experience slightly behind the Surge, the game is more ambitious in spots, and I hope it sells enough to warrant another go-round from Toadman. Really impressive considering the studio size. Thanks and welcome back, baby.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
I don't think this is Dave, aka SimPlus from Twitter, who was also kind of instrumental and drumming up a lot of hype for the game. But I just wanted to shout out SimPlus because he compiled a ton of lore information, and he was one of the big reasons. Like, he was one of the people like that I was talking to quite a bit while I was playing it for the first time. So yeah. Again, I don't think it's this Dave, and if it is, great. And if it's not, sorry, first Dave, second Dave is cooler than you. But yeah,
no, all Daves are good.
All Daves are cool.
We, Yeah, we shouted out SendPlus in the early episodes, and we use that document quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, cool. I thought so. I just wanted to make sure I said it once.
Yeah,
you want me to read Bruce's?
Sure.
Yeah, hit us up with Bruce.
Bruce says, first off, I've really enjoyed this game and want to commend Toadman for trying something new in the Souls-like genre. For a first try by a small team, I think they've done an admirable job. That being said, I feel like many of the enemy encounters were less than thoroughly considered, and many of the shortcuts were obviously added after the level was already complete and thus not super useful. There were multiple times when enemies spawned behind me and there were no effective cues to let me know the enemies were there. I almost never even used any of the shortcuts either. I also feel like the bosses were lacking a variety. I do hope that this team will be able to do a follow-up title in the same style, because I think they could definitely improve on it and make it great. Also, thank you so much for bringing back Bonfireside Chat. This has always been my favorite podcast, and while I understood why you discontinued it for a while, I couldn't be happier that you've brought it back. Keep up the great work, guys.
Thank you.
All that stuff sounds reasonably fair. Like, I think that can definitely be a takeaway. I'm not gonna take Bruce's experience away from him. I think the times that enemies spawned behind me maybe happened twice, and I always thought the shortcuts were really satisfying, even if I didn't use them a lot. So
I didn't have exactly that experience either. Like, the thing behind from behind is kind of a pain.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just how much it stands out to you.
Yeah,
you know, I also recognize that I play this game exceedingly slowly, like, it just in terms of my pace crawling through the level. Like, once I knew that teleporting snipers could be a thing, I really inch by inch this whole game. So, like, things coming behind me didn't end up being that big of a deal, because I was moving very slowly and very rarely had to deal with multiple things at once.
Yeah.
So that could be a difference.
I watched a Duckfeed person stream a little bit. They were on the snipers, the teleporting snipers, the first time you encountered them. And they were like, I'm dying over and over again. Like, you know, come watch me play this. And I watched them, and they were like running full tilt the entire time, and like it was like listening to a podcast on like 3x speed. It was just too much for me. I'm like, no, you need to slow the fuck down.
Yeah,
I don't know what's happening here. You're confusing me. Make it stop.
This is supposed to be football, not the 100-yard dash. I apologize if I've made a version of this point before, but I will reiterate it if I did. So important thing about Dark Souls is that you know what killed you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you have ranged combat, you do, you know, there's a risk of running into a situation where something just kills you from off screen. And even when that happens in regular Dark Souls games, that is unsatisfying. Here, by going straight to gun-based combat with gun-based enemies, you increase the risk that that happens, especially when they warp in behind you. Even though it didn't turn into that big of a problem for me, something that might, I think, reduce the likelihood of that catching somebody on the wrong side would be kind of the addition of a kill cam. Almost.
I love kill cams.
Yeah, we're like, okay, you died, and instead of immediately going to the load screen, it's like, all right, here's a replay, like from the perspective, like over the shoulder of the thing that killed you.
Did either one of you get the deal with it message?
Yes, I did.
Oh yeah.
yeah. So that's in the game. You just have to do it when you're carrying 30,000 fucking bits.
I thought that I was invaded by a PvP person when that happened. Like, wait a minute. is that possible for this? No, I got, yep, I got it. It was very funny. I just said it'd be cool if there was a kill cam. Just like, give me more information, especially when you do have the risk of something getting you from out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Let me skip the kill cam.
Totally. Yeah, just make it something the instantly you go through. Like, start loading the level. Absolutely. Or, you know, while it's happening.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
But yeah, those are really, really useful. I hate not knowing what killed me.
Yep.
To Souls' credit, it's not just that it's melee that it does it. It actually, during the you died message, the camera does pull back, and whatever killed you is almost always right there.
Yeah.
You know, like, it kind of starts milling about your corpse, which I really appreciate.
It's like, okay, what's next?
Yeah,
where are we going after?
You got any drink tickets in your pants? I need drink tickets.
Is this me?
This is you with Steven.
Yes. So Steven says via contact, I picked up this game based on your first episode about it. Aside from the first zone of Apexian, I haven't been back. I'm loving it. They've done a fantastic job balancing the distance between bonfires. And at one point, I ended up melee killing an enemy with no Estus left, only to discover the bonfire around the next corner. I also love the way they've done shortcuts. Dark Souls shortcuts already give a great dopamine rush when you unlock them. But at this point, I will often see them coming. The hidden paths that Immortal Unchained uses, on the other hand, make me feel like a genius when I discover them on my own and provide the same joy as regular shortcuts when I don't. Unrelatedly, I assume you guys have been bombarded by about Daughters of Ashe already, but I'd like to pile on that recommendation. It's a fantastic overhaul of Dark Souls, and it adds a bunch of new lore that I'd like to hear your thoughts on. I don't know that you would.
Yeah, Steven, yeah, I'm so sorry. This is not personal. I gave it a very solid effort with Daughters of Ashe. They've actually patched it. So it is, they've actually nerfed a bunch of areas in it.
Okay.
I think, you know, which, so I'm going to give it another shot because I do not want anyone to tell me, like, I mean, this is just a pet peeve of mine in general. I really don't want anyone to tell me that I didn't give this a good shot when I inevitably be like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
The lore stuff is interesting. Like, uh-huh. I totally agree with that. The making a whole game that is just, you thought a bonfire was here, but instead it's something that one hit kills you,
mm-hmm.
is not okay. Like, yeah. That's not good. That's not a fantastic overhaul, I don't think. I think that's a really shitty design. Mm-hmm. Like, just, you know, really, really, really bad, poorly made design with stuff. Like, it's real weird. Like, Daughters of Ashe is the biggest overhaul to Dark Souls. So, like, it does have this feeling of, like, oh, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are rounding up different to good because they're so familiar with Dark Souls. And there are a lot of things that legitimately are cool and kind of cooler than that. Like, cooler than the original version that I do like. Mm-hmm. But I played that for, like, 6 hours and gave up and then watched a Let's Play of the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I am sad and angry about Daughters of Ashe right now, but
yeah,
might give it another chance.
The arrow was let out of my balloon. so many people said good things about it.
I was so excited about also, it. I was saving it for a treat. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, I'm having a bad day today. I need a treat. And then sat down in the beginning. I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then immediately it's like, oh, you thought something good was here, but instead it's something that kills you. Gotcha. And I'm like, you know, you won, I guess, because I didn't know the thing, but you won in the same way, like someone I've never met, like walking up to me at the Telegram and then kneeing me in the balls. Like, yes, they hit me in the balls.
Yeah.
Like, that happened.
Nobody can argue
victory
that.
Condition, no one can argue that. That happened. If that's the victory condition for what it means to win to you, we are playing a different game.
Yeah.
I just wanted a telegram because you walked up to me with a telegram. I did not think you were going to kick me in the balls. If the idea is to create an environment where every single random person on the street might kick me in the balls,
mm-hmm.
that is not my idea of fun or good world design. No god would create that. The clockmaker fallacy would be in full effect. Like, it just cannot be. So, yeah, it is a... It bummed me out pretty good, actually. So,
what was the thing, like, you settled down like to for that as a treat, and when you realized, oh no, this treat's made of poison, like what did you do instead as your backup treat? I forget, was that the night where you watched Austin Powers?
I think that, yes, that was the night I decided I brought in the International Man of Mystery to bail me out of my funk, baby. Like, yeah, it was not a good scene. It was the kind of thing that the only thing that could save me is something I thought was uproariously funny when I was 19 years old. I had to time travel 20 years to get out of the Daughters of Ashe hole. Like, maybe they've changed it.
I don't want to beat up Steven too bad too, but when you say that something adds a bunch of new lore to Dark Souls, like, I could not be less interested. Like, it just that specifically, like, despite, you know, challenge or remixes or whatever, but like, if you're trying to tell, if you're actually adding stuff to that story, like, I'm kind of not here for it. Like, I barely consider Dark Souls 3 canon, much less like any new bullshit that you put into Dark Souls 1. So
it's pretty weird, man. Like, so if somebody doesn't want to hear it, go forward in the podcast like 3 minutes to avoid the spoiler. Some of the stuff makes sense. Like, when you kill when you make Dark Anor Londo, it makes dark everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and dark wraiths invade Anor Londo. and start killing the things. It's not they're all illusions. It's like there's an actual invasion. That's super cool.
Yep.
What's less cool is Sen is this legendary blacksmith lady that sounds like a self-insert character so much to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just real weird to just take a character and just create it whole hog.
I like to keep my powder dry on calling something fan fiction as an insult. But I'm going to use that powder a little bit here.
Yeah, it's definitely a fan fiction kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff is legitimately awesome that they do. Like when you go to New Londo ruins, the whole top half of it is there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Because the evil's sealed. So why would there be ghosts?
Yeah.
You know, and then once you unseal it, it gives everything's there. And I'm like, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like that is a great idea that should have been in the main game. There shouldn't be a bonfire that insta-kills you after a boss. Like, From would know better than that.
Yeah.
Why don't you know better than that, Daughters of Ashkai?
Like, it's like going through and looking at a like a bullet pointed list. I just had like just a terrible moment. Like somebody is going to excerpt this and put it on YouTube about why we're terrible. Hey, fuck you. But just like looking through a bullet pointed list of the things that they changed, it was like, it was almost like a 1-to-4 ratio of like, oh my gosh, that's great. Yeah, cool. And then like 3 is like, why? It was like, yes, why, yes, why. and everything, you know, and just to have everything emblazoned over with this kind of notion that like, you know, we're basing this on the original documents and this is what it would be. And like, that's extremely presumptuous. And it's like stealing a lot of valor that I don't know is necessarily coming your way.
Well, and valor that's very precious to me.
Yeah.
Like this is the preview of like, you know, a portion of what that episode will be. I think that if we do that episode and the game is still not palatable in its new form, will be us talking about in general the philosophy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
That the things we liked and didn't like. And then you have my word, I will call out the extremely cool things that people have been tweeting at me that are really cool.
Yeah.
And then also have my, like, I don't even feel like I have a tight 5 on the fucking bonfire mimic. I just think that like in any universe that just misguided, you know, I don't even understand how you have to explain why that's a bad idea, you know? So I don't know. It happens right after another troll, you know, it's just troll upon troll upon troll. Like, oh, Pinwheel can one-shot you now.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, he was easy before, and now it's different. I see. Oh, but then when you actually beat him, you die instantly, and you have to do that boss run again. And that boss run's 10 times as hard. Okay. Like, you certainly kicked me in the nuts.
Yeah.
You know? Congratulations.
No.
Kicker MD.
Nobody can argue that you kicked me in the nuts. Like, it's...
Yep. It is established that my nuts have been kicked.
It is beyond
good job. Speed.
Yeah.
I'm going to close this out here with Mike. Sorry about that little preview episode in the middle of this Immortal and Gene thing. Mike says via contact, I had a huge amount of fun with Immortal Unchained, and I think the evisceration it received at the hands of reviewers was largely unreasonable. Having said that, I can't help feeling that a perfect storm of events overpowered me fairly early in the game, and this did color my experience somewhat. I'd been relying largely on a sniper rifle. I'd given up on making progress in the charnels completely, and instead had tried beating my head against the enemies at Cinderward Gate, which I found similarly punishing. It started when I received a high-level energy sniper, which I didn't have the stats for, along with the aspect that gives you one free bullet for killing an enemy. I made it to the first obelisk in the Cinderwoods, and it felt a bit too easy to farm there, and because their close proximity means that you spawn repeatedly next to your bits when you die, so there's little consequence. On realizing this, I popped several advanced scavenger packs and was able to level up 5 or 6 times with only minimal grinding. I'm not that into grinding at all, but it was handed to me on a plate. Suddenly, I had access to that ridiculous energy sniper, and I was tearing through the enemies in the charnels, and it helped by the free bullet aspect. The difference was like night and day, and the sense of being OP did characterize my playthrough right to the end of the game, with the exception of Aris, given that all my weapons were energy weapons, which he's resistant to. And I had to find and level a physical carbine before feeling confident in that fight. This sort of thing has to be a balance issue. I don't think my sudden jump in ability has anything to do with my skill. I don't, those balance things like that, I'm not always the wrong person to to hear about them just because they don't bother me at all.
Yeah.
And I understand that's not necessarily fashionable, but I like that you can unbalance a game generally. You know, I wrangle against the every difficulty curve has to be an absolutely flat one.
Yeah.
In kind of modern games. Like, I actually like that you could do that.
Yeah. I have no firm opinion or reckon on how responsible a developer is for identifying and removing the possibility of degenerate play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, mm-hmm. okay, there is an extremely boring thing that you can do to make yourself powerful. Is it the to make yourself too powerful? Is it the developer's job to, you know, to stop that, like, to remove that? Or is it just kind of on everybody to, like, not decide to spend hours and hours doing the boring thing for an advantage, right? Because to me as a player, the grinding and the farming is necessarily like, oh yeah, that's why I wouldn't do that. Like, yeah. That is deterrent enough, right? So it's just it's hard for me to put myself into the head of somebody who would do that. So yeah, I don't have a firm opinion on it, you know.
If capacity to grind is a thing that is an unbalance issue, like in general in games, like that just applies to a lot of games.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In a pretty extreme way. Like, it has to be at least a little bit on the player to decide not to do the Dragon Quest, like playing this game is like climbing a mountain.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah. But it is like, it is possible that the you had a super weapon too, that might be a thing for sure.
Yeah. I had an extremely blessed run on my sniper run because the starting sniper rifle they give you is not super great. But literally the second enemy in Arden, like, just dropped a really great one. And all of a sudden I was one-shotting dudes from like that point of the game on.
Yeah.
And then, on my way to get the second, like, or really the, what's supposed to be like the first super good, sniper rifle that you can have access to that's guarded by two of the sword and shield dudes in Viridian. That's like it's in a chest behind them.
Mm-hmm.
On my way to get that gun, and I was killing the sword and shield guys, and one of them dropped the gun that was in the chest. So now I had two of the super good sniper gun. And then I also got the return one bullet on kill aspect pretty early. So like by the time I got to Iska, like to get the super super sniper gun, I was pretty much set. And even though like you can one shot enemies, it's still challenging. And I'm kind of with you, Gary, like give me ways to break the game, like give me the red tearstone ring and things like that will let me, you know, give me some risk reward payoffs and things like that. And you know, hey, if I definitely don't think a developer should be responsible for you. You know, I watched a video of someone the other day. It was on the Slack, and I'm not calling this dude out or anything, but they were grinding in that area in the Cinderwoods where an enemy can shoot at you on the obelisk, and you can literally shoot an enemy in the head, they die, and then he was, you know, hitting the button for the obelisk respawn, and then just shooting and doing that over and over again. And I'm like, man, like if you're just trying to get bits, like there's so many more fun ways to do that than just like, I know this is the most efficient, but like just because it's the fastest doesn't mean it's the best. Like it's just, that seems like so fucking boring. It would make me hate the game. Like I don't know why you would put yourself through that. And then, so yeah, like at a certain point, you know, just have fun with the game that you're playing. Like, I don't really think it's up to developers to be like, oh no, you've been grinding too much. You know,
it's like,
I know a lot of people like the despawning mechanic in Dark Souls 2, but that always made me feel like I was just terrible at the game. Like the first time I saw, you know, one of the executioners on the way to the chariot was not there anymore, I was like, oh, I suck ass. And this is the way the game is like making it easy for me.
Right.
And, but so like it would offended me personally, but I get it while it was doing it. Cause you know, but I just don't grind in video games, y'all. It's not fun. Yeah. Unless you, I guess, like it, which in that case, like, maybe find a better video game to play. Yeah. I don't know, man. There's other stuff you could do besides the same thing over and over again.
I'm a person who exists in the world. I am incredibly angry at God because Soylent exists and therefore all food sucks and is pointless.
Yeah, like, and so I have to drink that because it's the most efficient and cheap way to do it.
Right.
Like some people I think do genuinely enjoy grinding. Some people, though, I think do have just this weird, like, if I'm not doing this the most efficient way possible.
Yeah.
You know, I think that just to go back to the comment real quick, the one thing I think that is the seed of what is a developer problem in this is that it's not so much grinding. It's that once getting that weapon, which is only 5 or 6 levels above, it was so unbalanced.
It put you above the curve permanently. Like that should have been.
And,
yeah.
And that can be a thing. Like, I want to break the game. I definitely want to break the game. I think that there is something where it's just like, oh, you got something that should have kept you above the curve for a couple hours.
Yeah.
I hate the like Dragon Age modern BioWare, like, oh, I'm above the curve for 2 seconds.
Right.
You know, like my plus 4% frost damage instead of plus 1% frost damage, epic loot. That stuff drives me nuts. But yeah. I think that, you know, just saying like, oh, this obviates the rest of the game.
Yeah.
You know, is the thing. I mean, honestly, like so many things, it's just Dark Souls is the lesson, right? Like Drake Sword.
Yep.
Drake Sword is extremely good. It's good up through sends.
Yep.
And then it's no longer good. Like that's the perfect, it's hard to get. Uh-huh. That is the perfect like game breaking, curve breaking example, I think.
Yeah. It's like breaking the curve by potentially doing something boring for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just fighting. You can also just chop it off.
Yeah,
like it's not boring. Like you can do the arrow thing, but like I've never successfully arrowed it off. I always have to attempt him to come down.
Oh, weird.
When I've gotten the Drake Sword.
Huh.
So that has been Immortal Unchained.
Yeah.
The game.
Jeremy,
thank you. Thank you for suggesting this. Thank you for guesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for everything.
Hey.
Thank you for your height.
You're welcome. And thank you for talking about my height constantly. That makes me feel, you know, big. thank you for having me. And thank you for discussing the game and everything. I met you guys through Bonfireside Chat. That's how I became fans of the network. That's how I became friends with the two of you. That's how I eventually started a podcast with one of you and guested on a bunch with the other ones. So like Bonfireside is always like one of my favorite podcasts. I know that's a weird thing to say while you're on a podcast, but I, you know, having not only the opportunity to guest on it, but to also kind of maybe dictate the game was really, really fun. So I'm glad you like it. And I'm glad that everything worked out. So
yay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 Love it. You are welcome. And thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks everybody listening. What are we doing next time, Cole?
We are talking about Dead Cells. It's going to be one episode, I believe, because of, you know, Sekiro timing, right? But yeah, one up on Dead Cells.
Yep, a game that has some things in common with Dark Souls, not tons, but enough, and is interesting in its own right.
Yes.
So, one episode on Dead Cells, then we'll be doing Sekiro, Daughters of Ashe, either the one-off or the series, depending on how that ends up articulating, will probably come after that.
Yes.
And then after that, who knows?
Yeah, we got a lot.
Following rewind season.
Second chance.
Second
chance. Let's do Dark Souls 1 again for the third time.
Yeah, we've remastered the podcast. So look forward to Lords of the Fallen.
Lords of the Fallen: Redemption.
The redemption arc. Yeah, that how is that not the sequel to Lords of the Fallen?
Lords of the Fallen: Rising.
Yeah, Rising. Lords of the Fallen: Rising. Risen. Lords of the Fallen: Risen. Jeremy, where can people find your podcasts?
The best place is probably on Twitter at JG Greer. I do a podcast called Don't Give Up Skeleton, where I interview people about their experience with the Souls games. I also do a podcast called Days of Future Cast. Me and Gary do it. We talk about how horny She-Hulk is. So, you know, jump into a recent episode if you're feeling intimidated by that. So come listen to us talk about how horny She-Hulk is. It's really fucking crazy, y'all. And then I do a podcast called Monster of the Week, which is about the TV show Supernatural. That show has its own like little miniature network, and we do a bunch of different shows. We cover the dreaded anime. We've covered some Witcher books. We're doing all kinds of weird shit over there. That's monsteroftheweek.cool. So go check all that out.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. All recommended.
Yeah,
definitely do. And support those on Patreon.
Yes.
So, and we will see you in 2 weeks time. Until next time, Umbasa.
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 And we all pray that we will have far more soon.
Awesome. I've been hanging on to this for a while, but you guys know where Tailspin is located, like in this, like because I looked it up when we were got on the tangent. it's like, in a fictional city called Camp Suzette, and there's like some somebody spent some time on Camp Suzette. Like, the year-round climate is balmy and pleasant, although temperatures become noticeably cooler in winter. Due to Cape Suzette's location in the mid-tropics, the area experiences extremely mild winters, causing frequent rainstorms instead of snowfall during the winter months. What the fuck, internet? What is wrong with
the primary export
from the source book for people playing the Tailspin tabletop RPG? Yeah. Good night.
This is just like that was just like one section. Like, people go fucking deep into this thing. It is ridiculous.
It is considered for an Emmy.
Huh.
Man. It won for an episode called Plunder and Lightning, which has a Wikipedia entry that's like 6,000 words long. What happened?
Fetishes.
While we were recording.
Gary, you know what we got to do. I know it's not Marvel, but you know what we have to do.
Oh, goodness.